Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to Phoenix Business Radio, broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studio in downtown Tempe, where we help build businesses and connect you with the right people. I'm Karen Nowicki, and I am very pleased to introduce you today to a very important topic and two fantastic professionals who are helping lead the way around safety and awareness. I'd like to introduce you first, Dr. Gary Witt, President of Global Gun Safety Awareness. Welcome, Gary.
Thank you, Karen. I'm looking forward to this.
We've talked about this for a while, so I'm glad our schedule's finally aligned to have you join us. So thank you for taking time out of your day to be here. And you've brought a special guest with you as well. We have Jerry Hills, founder and president of Arizonans for Gun Safety. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
I'm so thrilled. When Gary said that he was going to have a chance to see if you, the two of you, can come together, it just makes sense that we're all here together to have this conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah. So could you start for us first, Jerry? Tell us a little bit about Arizonans for Gun Safety and how that all came together.
Yeah, I started Arizonans for Gun Safety 23 years ago after the murder of my younger brother. He was an off-duty police officer from Michigan who had been ambushed and killed by a suspect. A lot of the same topics that we're still talking about today. And it happened in October of 1994. And right around this time, Mother's Day of 1995, I saw a little article in the Arizona Republic that said that the Brady campaign was looking for volunteers for a Mother's Day project. And, you know, good PTA mom that I was, I picked up the phone and dialed the 800 number and explained who I was and what had happened and offered to help. And they put me on hold and got connected right through and was speaking to Sarah Brady herself.
Oh, wow.
And explained my story again. And she said, we're having hearings on the Hill about the assault weapons ban and seeing if we can strengthen the Brady background check bill. These were all brand new back in those days. And she said, will you come to Washington and lobby and testify on the Hill? And of course, being very naive and not knowing what any of that meant, I said, yeah, I'll go. And so I got on a plane and went to DC and an advocate was born. And I learned and that, and with Brady's help, I came back to Phoenix and gathered an incredible group of community activists here in Phoenix. And we founded Arizonans for Gun Safety later that year. So been involved doing this work and actively trying to work to reduce gun deaths and injuries in Arizona since.
Thank you. That's a tall order. And from a personal experience to landing on Capitol Hill just because you're being led to do something about this. And then now all these years later, clearly knowledgeable, leading the way and helping to change policy, right?
Trying to, yes.
Yeah. Have you had any success in these years that you've been doing it?
Yeah, we have had successes here in Arizona. One of the most highlighted was I worked on the time with Otis and Lori Smith, whose daughter Shannon was a young girl sitting in her backyard and was killed by random fire. It's a very well-known case here in Phoenix. Literally, someone shot a gun off in the air and the bullet came down and struck her in the head and killed her. And at the time, that was not a felony here in the state. And I helped write and pass that bill. So that's something I am very proud of and been a very effective piece of safety legislation and had to defend that several times over the years. And worked with Gabby Giffords when she was in the state house. Yes. and wrote bills with her, fought off some bad ones. This year was very involved in the governor's school safety plan and unfortunately was not able to strengthen it to a point that we felt it would be effective. But we were very glad to then kind of scratch that piece of legislation. And we hope to start again next legislation and put something better together.
I was going to say, each time that you get involved in this, there's a learning curve and you learn something new and something more and can take it to the next impactful moment.
Yeah. And we learn from other states too and what they've done. I mean, I think we know what we need to do and we know what steps we need to take to reduce gun deaths and violence. It's just a question of finding the will and the strategies to implement those.
Yeah. Incredible. Gary, tell us about Global Gun Safety Awareness and how that was founded.
Well, Global Gun Safety Awareness is a 501c3 charity that really was an outgrowth of work that we had done before with a company that was promoting the idea of gun safety with parents with small children. And we were At the same time, we were pushing an opportunity for these parents to use a device that would, the kids could not get off, but at the same time, parents could. And so our focus with the charity has been to alert parents to the idea that a hidden gun is not a safe gun.
Right.
That is probably one of the biggest fallacies out there that leads to the death of so many kids. About 8,000 kids a year are shot accidentally, unintentionally. And most of them, 85% of them, happen in a home or a car. And it's just because parents, and especially dads, simply believe that if I hide the gun, Johnny will never find it. And so our goal is to simply alert parents that is not the case.
Mm-hmm. I would imagine a time too that a parent feels like they've educated their child and said, listen, we have a gun. Don't touch it. Stay away from it. It is going to be put away. And, you know, if you ever come, I don't know how those conversations go, but, and even just educating a child though, that's not enough to keep them from being curious if they ever come across it.
Well, we wouldn't, I always say that it's never, it's the parents, it's the gun owner's job to keep the child safe. That's what our job is as parents. Yeah. So let's use the pool analogy, right? We live here in Phoenix. And so most responsible parents, if you have a pool or your, you know, family members or neighbors, we all take our kids to swim lessons, right? Well, just because you've given your kids swim lessons does not mean that we don't have an obligation to put that fence around that pool and a padlock on the gate, or you would never say, okay, I've taught them how to swim. I've done my job. The responsibility for water safety is now on the child. It's the exact same thing with firearms, or, you know, the same thing as I told the kid not to drink bleach, you know, so I don't need to take little ones and lock up right. The cleaning supplies. It is that same thing. So education is certainly a piece, and there's a lot of really great education curriculums out there. Ask Smart, all those kind of things that talk about gun safety and safe storage and all those great things. But without that physical barrier, that safe storage piece, and whether that's a trigger lock or is it in a safe or whatever, without that physical barrier piece, then it's an incomplete safety message. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that's very, very important. And to say, well, I've taught my kids enough, that is a very false sense of security. And it's putting the responsibility on the child. And that's not fair. It's not responsible. They're children. The job is ours.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely right. There, somehow, parents recognize that children are children and they make mistakes, except when it comes to things like guns, in which case they think of them as small adults. Why? I have trained my kid. Of course he would never touch this gun. You know, they're not little adults, you know. And so what happens is that the kids will, when they are trained, and there's 2020 did a story about this about like 5 years ago, something like that. And they put these kids through a training session with the NRA's Eddie Eagle program, which is a very good program, you know, and it teaches the four steps about this in terms of, you know, if you see a gun, don't touch it, go away, call an adult, that kind of thing. And the kids passed the test with flying colors. Then they left them in a room with a gun that they found. It was hidden, sort of. They found it and they filmed it. So they wanted to see what the kids would do. Well, most of the kids touched it. They played with it. They picked it up.
Even just having had the training. And passed with flying colors.
Passed with flying colors. Wow. Because it's a difference, and this is the key, it's a difference between logic and emotion. Guns for kids are like a magnet, especially for boys. And so what happens is they played with it, you know, and finally, after a couple of minutes, then they said, we found a gun. We found a gun. But not until it would have been too late if the gun had been loaded.
Yeah, actually, research has shown that the NRA's Eddie the Eagle program is the least effective of any of the gun safety programs. And I was actually on a national talk show years ago, like 2002, where they recreated the same thing. ABC did it, and they took the control group of kids who hadn't been through Eddie the Eagle, a group of kids who were put through Eddie the Eagle, put them together in a room. And the parents were sitting in the audience, and I was up on stage with Ann Coulter, by the way. And the kids who had been through Eddie the Eagle did. And not only did they still continue to play with it, Reachers has actually found children who have been through the Eddie the Eagle program actually go and play with the guns more.
They feel like they're safer.
They feel like they're safer. It's a false sense of security. And I will never forget sitting in the audience, and I watched the mom of one of the little girls in the thing. And she says, "I know, let's play suicide." And the little girl picked up the toy gun, put it to her head, and went bang, bang.
Mom had to have
Mom just about lost it. And sitting there in the thing. So again, it goes back to it's this false sense of security, and there is nothing that can replace a physical barrier between a child and a loaded firearm.
Absolutely right.
So let's talk about physical barriers, right? So I'm thinking from a husband or a father's perspective, the male in the home, they have a gun, they feel safer, they lock it in their, I don't know, wherever their the gun safety case or whatever it is, or their tool chest, I don't know where they put them. And now it's inaccessible in the case of a need for it for home safety or whatever, right? That's why when we spoke months ago about the child safety lock on the gun itself, from the perspective, I think, of the parent and the responsible gun owner, if there's ever a need for it, there's a quick release that that adult can manage, but a child can't. And now there's not have to find the keys and that sort of thing. So I'm kind of making up the scenario as I go, but I'd love for both of you to speak to that.
I think in general, and, I have talked to hundreds of people about this, gun owners, parents, gun dealers, it doesn't matter. The story is almost always the same. If there's a gun, dad will bring a gun home and mom will say, "Well, you have to lock it up. We have a 10-year-old. And dad will say, "I can't lock it up because in there an emergency, I have to be able to get to it fast." And she said, "Well, can't you put a gun lock or a trigger blocker or something?" He says, "No." I said, "You know, it works with a key." "Well, I can't. What if I lose the key? What about a combination lock?" "No, what if I forget the combination at 2 a.m. in the morning when somebody's breaking in?" Now there's a 3-hour argument. Finally, in desperation, okay, dad says, "I will hide it. Johnny will never find it." And mom, realizing that she is not going to win this argument, says, "You better hide it real good." Okay. So dad loves the kid as much as mom does. Yeah. Research has shown that dads, men in general, are more confident in their beliefs about risk than women are. So dad hides his, "I'm going to put it up on the third shelf under my sweaters. Johnny will never look up there." Well, in point of fact, a research study by Harvard several years ago, and they did this very cleverly. They went to families and they interviewed the parents. Then they interviewed the kids. So they said to the parents, "Yeah, does Johnny know where your hidden gun is?" And somewhere in the neighborhood of 25 to 30% said, "Yeah, he knows where it is." So about 70% that he doesn't. Then they went to the kids. "Do you know where the hidden gun is?" And 73% of the kids said, "Yes, I know where the gun is." Now, you have to ask yourself this. If you were a kid and your parents were in the other room and a stranger you did not know said, "Do you know where the gun is?" And you know you're not supposed to know where the gun is, would you admit it? I think that number is a lot higher than 73%. Yeah. Because I've asked people, "When you were a kid, was there anything ever hidden from you?" And they said, "No, not really. You know, I explored." Yeah, that's what kids do.
Yeah.
You know.
They can find the Christmas presents.
I was
they can
thinking
find
that
the guns.
Too. Yeah,
absolutely
and
right.
With the Christmas presents, there's some just some fun and mystique, and again, this whole idea of curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, I'm fascinated and overwhelmed. As we came into the studio, Jerry, you had mentioned that there was an incident today in California, and I said I hadn't even heard about it. Can you speak to what you've heard just today?
Information's still coming out, but from what we know, there was an incident in Palmdale in California this morning at a high school. What we know, there was a 14-year-old who brought a gun to school, appears to be a rifle, and shot a classmate. It was a targeted shooting. It wasn't a random thing. The shooter is in custody, and the victim is expected to live, thank God. But again, whenever these things happen, I always back up the thing and goes, where did a 14-year-old get access to a loaded firearm? And we know statistically and by studies that overwhelmingly they got it at home. I'm willing to bet money on it right now when they find out where he got it from home or from a family member. And it always goes back to, you know, we talk about responsible gun ownership. You know, there are responsibly stored firearms and there are irresponsibly loaded firearms. And everything is a continuum here. You know, I mean, when we talk about putting a barrier between kids and guns, all right, you know, we can talk about small children, we can talk about teenagers, we can talk about things. And there's a whole continuum of options for that. And I think what Gary's product is so innovative is that it tries to find that middle ground. You know, when he was talking about, you know, again, well-intentioned people, dad brings home a firearm because he wants to protect his family and he feels that way. Now we know data shows that a firearm in the home is actually a risk factor, not a protection factor. A firearm in the home is 4 times more likely to be used against you or a family member than it is an armed intruder. That's what data shows. But the perception out there is very different. And there is a significant section of our population that truly believes that they want a firearm and it is their right to have a firearm to protect themselves and their family. And that's not going to change very much. You know, I mean, regardless of what data says, but it is a risk factor. So they bring this into the home. There are children in the home. And it is not even necessarily their own children. You know, their children have friends that come over to play. There are family members that come over to play. Grandparents do this. So then then you find that middle ground. So I hide it. Well, children are curious, you know, but the statistics show that when you have a firearm in the home, a whole lot of things statistically have a higher chance of happening. Suicides, unintentional shootings. And if you notice, Gary and I use different language around that. Gary talks about accidentals. I use the word unintentional because there's a school of thought in public health that they tend to use the words unintentional because, again, no child gets their hands on a firearm unless it passes through the hands of an adult first. So we always go back to where's the adult, where's the gun owner, and how is that firearm stored? What to prevent it? And these are all voluntarily things. I mean, we've seen 28 states have passed a law called child access prevention laws in various states. In some states, a gun owner can be held criminally and civilly liable, where that says if a child gets a hold of your firearm and harms themselves or other, you are held accountable. And in those states, they have seen dramatic drops in both unintentional shootings and in teen suicides. In states that have done this, teen suicides have dropped 28%.
Wow.
You know, this is where policy backs up common sense and education and putting those physical barriers in. So again, but it all comes back to you have to be able to be the adult, make that reasonable choice for a child who we all know what brain development looks like. They have impulse control. You know, when you do get into teenage years and you look at that, I just looked at a report that came out this week from the Center for American Progress. And in Arizona, our teen suicide rates are way above the national average. And part of that is partly because of lack of access to counselors and mental health, which is what, you know, some of the kids were talking about with trying to talk to the governor about. It's been a big issue this year. But the other thing is there are huge, you know, easy access to firearms in this state. And when I talk about higher access to teen suicide rates, it is those that involve firearms and they get those firearms at home.
Wow.
It's scary about suicides. And, you know, we're happy that, that parents, you know, hopefully will be putting more emphasis on trying to block their kids. But one of the problems with teen suicides is that parents simply do not understand how big the problem is or how much of a danger their kids are in. I mean, we've got roughly 15 million kids in high schools around the country. And the statistics show that almost 9% of those kids now have tried to kill themselves. 9%. 18% have seriously thought about it. They've sat and said, well, gosh, maybe I should. And you say, well, how can that be? Well, it's just what Jerry had said. You know, I mean, this is a time of emotions. You know, you're awash in hormones. And if you're rejected by your peer group or whatever, it's the worst thing in the world. I don't want to live anymore. So, I mean, fortunately, and it's only semi-fortunate, I suppose, you know, of the people who do try to kill themselves, only one in 25 are successful. But then to put that into perspective, 148 kids an hour try to kill themselves. One in 25 are successful. So what does that work out to? That's over 100 kids a day around the country that are successful in killing themselves. And boys do it. Girls are twice as likely to try. Boys are four times more successful. And the reason for that, boys use a gun 86% of the time. Girls will tend to use what they call poison or suffocation. But basically, they take pills of some kind. You know? But whether your kid is successful or not, your kid has tried to kill himself and you didn't see it.
Yeah.
You know, so lock up the guns and we'll prevent a lot of suicides.
Yeah. I'm just looking through this. I'm still trying to read through the report that was released this week, but on three major indicators, so unintentional shootings, suicides, and teenage girls in domestic violence related shootings, Arizona ranks in the bottom 11 in all three categories.
That's frightening. Yeah. So you mentioned public health. Can you talk to us about a public health approach to this? How and why is that important? How does that get done?
Gun deaths and injuries cost Arizona $1.9 billion a year. This is a public health problem. When you talk to the American Academy of Pediatrics, you know, their message is right on point to what Gary's organization talks about, what Arizona's for Gun Safety has been talking about. We've been giving out trigger locks and talking about safe storage for 20 plus years. Certainly not devices as sophisticated as Gary's has got now, which is really the next generation. But, you know, they talk about talking to parents about gun safety and safe storage and those kind of things. In some states, there are laws where pediatricians are prohibited from talking to parents about gun safety. Laws have been put in place. They can't. So when you go see your pediatrician, they can talk to you about, you know, how are the cleaning supplies stored, or, you know, are the kids in the right kind of car seats, but they can't talk about firearms and how they're stored in their house. They're prohibited from that.
Why?
Because the gun lobby has lobbied and gotten laws passed in states. They're physician gag laws. And this is silly because the public health sector knows what to do about this. We've been talking about the same things before, and it really is about adequate counseling, adequate education, these physical barriers, and, you know, child access prevention laws, things like that. And we can really reduce the number of gun deaths and injuries involving children in our state and firearms. We would treat it like, if we would just look at that, like we do pool safety and car safety and any other thing that we look at in terms of our children. You know, a lot of kids were accidentally doing overdoses because we used to not have the right kind of caps on our pill bottles, yeah. Right? I mean, we can do these things. And if we think about the cap on a pill bottle the same way we talk about putting a lock, you know, a safety lock on a firearm, or, you know, the right kind of crib, or, you know, or designing the right kind of car seat, then we can stop this kind of thing. But again, it always amazes me in a state that likes to pinch every penny and $1.9 billion. And, you know, Gary was talking to me before the show about how little prevention, you know, how $1 in prevention buys us so much. And, you know, and the average gunshot costs anywhere from $50,000 to $150,000. You know, I mean, so again, we're going to pay for this one way or the other. And as a society, again, do we want to pay for prevention or do we want to pay for the back end and have to pay for the carnage?
And why is it so hard? Because of folks in favor of guns? Who is it? Who barks louder when it comes to this kind of policy? Or like, why is this so hard?
Wow. It is hard. The gun lobby is an extremely powerful one. It's one that, you know, I may vehemently disagree with, but I certainly respect their influence. I certainly saw it in play in this legislative session. I mean, goodness, look at Parkland. And after that, we had 25,000 kids down on the Senate lawn, you know.
It's a march.
March. Very clearly telling the governor what they wanted. And he didn't listen. But he huddled behind closed doors with the gun lobby and the NRA and came up with a bill that was basically useless. You know, I mean, so I don't think it's necessarily in terms of loud, but there is influence. I think some of it is, again, based on ideology and idolatry. Mm-hmm. And there are some people who really do. There are these set of myths. I need a gun to protect myself. It's my right. It's somehow tied to being an American or patriotic. There's all of these myths, right? Or, you know, it's a question of educating. I've taught my children not to touch it just because my dad taught me not to touch the hunting rifle in the closet and everything was fine in my house. It's going to be okay again. Mm-hmm. You know, it's overcoming those kind of things when you want to try to deal with facts. And I keep going back to, we need to be making policy on data and facts and not based on ideology. I mean, what if we just simply said that, you know what, every time you buy a firearm in this state, you got to buy a lock too.
Right.
You know, and you have to store it. Or once again, it's that thing of, fine, you know, dad, if you really think you can hide it, but know that, you know, either there's an insurance liability or there's going to be a civil or criminal liability if that happens, you know, put the stick in with the carrot and see what happens. Mm-hmm. I think it's a combination of things.
Yeah.
One of the things that is law now, that for anytime you buy a firearm, it comes with a trigger block. It's a collar cable lock that basically it threads through the barrel. These things cost $2. National Shooting Sports Federation, which is a foundation, which is as bigger than the NRA, gives these out. And I've talked to the head of education for NSSF. And I said, you know, nobody uses these. And he says, I know. But he says, we give them out anyway. And I said, well, why don't they use them? And I've talked to gun shop owners about this too. And they say, yeah, we've got a barrel. They buy the gun, they take the little gun lock out, they throw it in the barrel. The reason is because these are key operated and nobody trusts the idea that an emergency, I'm going to have to go find a key, mm-hmm. especially in the dark. Mm-hmm. Okay. So it just doesn't work. One of the things that we're pushing, and again, through the foundation, you know, we're perfectly happy for anybody to use anything, okay? And there are some new technologies out there, including biometric fingerprint readers, that will give you faster access to this. We happen to like ChildSafe One simply because it works like a childproof medicine cap, and it's like built-in suspenders. We have never found a kid that could get this product off. But even if they have been shown how, put your fingers here, squeeze hard. If you're under 12 years old, you simply don't have that muscle strength in your fingers to actually squeeze that spring enough to get it off. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's why we like that one. Plus, it has an alarm, which is really good for parents. But we don't care what they use as long as they wake up. And the problem is after dad hides the gun and mom is scared, and then days go by, months go by, maybe years go by, the kids never found the gun that they know of. Okay. Because if you find the gun, if you're a kid, you find the gun, you play with it. I don't care if you're a kid and you know where the gun is. Are you just going to, oh, look, there's a gun and put the sweaters back? Not a chance. You're going to take it out and handle it, and especially if you're a boy. So,
and you're likely not going to go then tell on yourself after the fact.
No.
You're probably going to show your friends the next time they're over.
Parents are living in a state of delusional fantasy that their kid is safe because they have never found the gun. Mm-hmm. And frankly, it's like a parachute, you know? It only takes one time and the kid is dead or he's shot, you know, grievously. And if that kid then, instead of shooting himself, kids under 10 years old, you know, especially tend to shoot themselves more often. But if you go to a friend or a friend comes over to your house and that kid shoots a kid from another family, we're not just talking about $50,000 or $100,000 in medical bills. We're talking about civil lawsuits or criminal lawsuits in this. And that's, it'll devastate a family. The other devastation is this. Half of all families where a kid has shot himself, doesn't matter whether he's dead or not, half of those families disintegrate within 2 years.
Sure.
And it's guilt, it's anger, it's mom saying, I told you, you should have done this, and dad's feeling guilty, but I thought I was right.
And yet, with a lock, policy change, we can really drastically, if not eliminate, I'm hopeful, but drastically eliminate and reduce these unintentional deaths.
Absolutely.
Unintentional shootings. I'm fascinated by this conversation. And I have a 10-year-old at home and I have two in college. And we didn't grow up in a home with a gun, but I know both my ex-husband and my husband have grown up in homes with guns. And I sit in that place of concern for our safety as a family, just with, you know, with how social media and media overall is. I think we tend to feel less safe because we hear so many stories more frequently about in-home break-ins, in-home invasions, just the crazy situations where someone is being shot. And at the same time, and I have a brother in law enforcement, actually my sister and her husband are retired law enforcement from California as well. So I'm not afraid of guns, but I'm afraid of guns. You know, I mean, it's a double-edged sword. Gary, talk to us a little bit more about the Child One safety lock. What is the name of it again, Chuck?
Child Safe One.
Child Safe One. And so describe how it fits or works with a gun. And aren't guns all different sizes? So do you need to have it like a phone case? You have to have a bunch of different models? How does it work?
No, Child Safe One is relatively small. It's roughly the size of your closed fist. And it's in two parts. So it fits on either side of the trigger so that the child can't touch it. Once it's armed, if you move the gun a quarter of an inch, the alarm goes off. The alarm is a 90 decibel alarm, which is pretty loud. In fact, we've tested it with kids. You know, the first thing that kids will do when the alarm goes off, every one of them, they'll look over their shoulder as if is mom coming, and then they'll put it down. We had one 5-year-old that the alarm scared him so much he wet his pants. It was so embarrassing.
Oh, sure.
But you know,
but your point being, it's effective. The alarm is effective because it gets them to stop what they're doing immediately.
And it warns mom.
And scares
so
them.
So mom can come. But again, you know, no kid has ever been able to get it off. 85% of untrained adults cannot get it off, which leads us to believe that would be the same percentage roughly with teenagers who might want to access it for bad reasons, either school shootings or whatever. Child Safe One fits on both handguns and long guns, shotguns, rifles, AR-15s. It covers that also. And the other benefit of it too is that even if you were to hit it with a sledgehammer to try to get it off, you can't because it's made out of this polyfiber carbonate material that Glock uses to make its handguns with. Mm-hmm. So I'll tell you an interesting story. And this is a woman, Karen, that you and I know, Sally Valencia. Sally had gotten a couple of these. She had given them to her sons, who both are gun owners, and they had put them on. They were at a picnic a few months ago, and the little kids out there, it's a big family picnic, they were playing with Smurf guns. Smurf guns? Nerf guns.
Nerf
guns. Okay. And one of the little boys, he was 6 years old, one of her, Sally's grandsons, his gun stopped working for some reason. And in his mind, he said, oh, my dad has a gun in the car. I'll just go get that gun and play. So he ran to the truck, opened the car, opened the little console, found dad's gun, and ran back. And Sally said, I saw him running back from the truck, waving this Glock, and realizing I am so far away, I'll never make it before he gets to the kids. And then she heard him yell, Daddy, take it off, take it off, take it off. Said if had not been for this device on there, probably a kid would have died or at least been shot.
Wow.
I know. Yeah. And the other thing that we see more and more now, gun trainers will tell you that over 50% of their classes now are women. Women and seniors are the two biggest classes. And 65% of women, when they're surveyed, when they ask why, protection. That's it. Not just protection at home, protection when they're out in the car or whatever. So they put the gun in their purse, unprotected, other than maybe with a zipper. There was a woman in Chicago last year. She was going to take her six-year-old or no, her four-year-old out, and she went put the purse on the counter, went out to get her coat. Little kid climbed up on the counter, opened the purse, found the gun, shot himself before mom could get back with her coat. It happens that fast. It's like with pools. 2 seconds is too long.
Yeah. We were at a graduation celebration for my daughter night before last. And even though my 10-year-old son knows that I want him to ask before he goes in my purse, I look over from, you know, about six people away, and he's sitting down with his cousin, and he has this money spread across his hands, and he's smiling at me because he's clearly been in my purse, in my wallet, and now my money is being flashed around. I'm like, what? And no gun in my purse. But who's to say that if I weren't just readily carrying it, or that moment when we say, hey, go grab, you know, can I have a piece of gum, mom, go grab gum, or grabbing my keys for me, or can you get my phone, without taking that full responsibility, but also wanting to be safe. If we gave the parent that, okay, we get that you want to be safe. We get that. But where, again, is the level of responsibility that you are the adult? It ultimately comes down to you.
There was this was like 2 years ago now. There was a young woman who is a blogger for the NRA. Mm-hmm. And her little boy was in the front seat. And he crawled into the back seat, found mom's gun in her purse, pulled it out, accidentally shot her in the back. She lived, but she was shot. You know? Another little boy, and I think this was in Detroit, his mother had taken him to Albertsons. And he was sitting in the little seat, you know, backwards. Mom's purse was right next to him. She was over getting a canned good. He found the gun, accidentally pointed at her, shot her. Killed her right there on the island at Albertsons. And you could say, you can't make this stuff up because it sounds like fiction. But this happens every week, every day.
There's been five children, there's been five unintentional shootings this week alone. And to date in 2018, I looked it up just before this show, we've had over 1,000 children and teens shot in America so far this year. And for April 11th, May 11th today.
Right.
And to Gary, to your point, it feels so far-fetched that my kid would be impacted or would make an unwise decision or whatever, how you want to term it, because it seems like it just isn't going to happen.
It always happens to somebody else.
Right.
Until it doesn't. Until it doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a case a few years ago where, and again, you and I both come from law enforcement families. Officer was coming home at the end of the day and said he had his service firearm in his duffel bag, set it down just for a second, you know, put it down, got distracted by the dog or something for a few minutes. His three-year-old got into it, found his service revolver, killed himself. Oh. Okay. I mean, and these are trained law enforcement officers. I mean, it just, as you said, 2 seconds is too long. All it takes. There was another question. Father and son, guys were very responsible gun owner with teenagers. He normally kept all his firearms in a safe in the garage. They took a couple guns out and they had gone, he and his son had gone shooting to the range over the weekend. And, you know, family day, gone to the range, shooting everything. And it was in a bag or whatever. And for some reason, whatever, when they got home that week, it's Sunday, whatever it was, he set the duffel bag near the safe, but didn't put the firearms, those two back in the safe for that reason. Monday or Tuesday comes along. His son, I think, is like 12, 13. It's middle school. God, middle school. You know, everything is the end of the world in middle school. Son got in trouble at school for something. Mom got called. You know, he's freaking out. He's upset. He'd run home. She, by the time she got there in time to find him in the backyard with his father's firearm, and he killed himself in front of his mother. Yeah, again, you know, suicide is an impulsive act most of the time. And this is a family who, for 99% of the time, are very responsible firearm owners. I am not anti-gun. I have a CCW, okay? It's not about that. It's about understanding the real responsibility of the lethality of these firearms and saying, you know, hiding them is good enough, you know, and have carrying one around in my purse like I do my compact and my cell phone. It's not your cell phone. You can't talk in it. You can't tuck it in your purse the way it does your cell phone. And making sure that you're carrying and storing that in a very different way. And so there's a huge public education piece to this. And there's that knowing that, you know, if you could, and let's face it, these days, firearms aren't cheap. When you make the investment in that and you know you've got children or you're going to be around children, because this is grandparents and aunts and uncles too.
Sure, sure.
You know, then you buy the right safety device so that firearm, like you said, is. If you really feel that you've got to have instant accessibility or near instant accessibility, okay. I mean, that's an argument for another day as far as I'm concerned. But if you do, okay, fine. But then you buy that right piece to do that with. And that's the way you secure your firearm that way so that that impulsive six-year-old doesn't think, oh, I can replace daddy's Glock with my Nerf gun. Because they're children. They do think that way. Mm-hmm. They're not. I don't care how many times you put them through Eddie the Eagle. You're never going to replace that impulsivity of a six-year-old. Mm-hmm. And this is how tragedies happen. And it destroys family. As Gary said, it destroys families. It destroys. And it's not only the family. It's their community. It's their friends. It's their teachers at school. I mean, we're doing studies now about what, you know, related trauma does to communities and to color. This is that ongoing impact, and we can prevent this.
Yep.
Absolutely. And, I appreciate you saying you're not anti-gun. This is around responsibility.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the truth of the matter is that almost everybody we have ever talked to, whether you're pro-gun, anti-gun, I mean, we've had booths at NRA, at NSSF, and I've talked to hundreds and hundreds of these people. And everybody across the board says, this is a terrific idea. You know, whether we're talking about Child Safe One or something else, nobody wants to see a child hurt. And if you ask the average gun owner, you know, what are the most important things? It's safety, safety, safety. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just that somehow there is a disconnect when it comes to dad's idea of I have got to protect my family and I've got to do it by having a gun, and it's a gun that's readily accessible. Mm-hmm. And this is not just true. Now, as Jerry said, it's not just true with parents, with grandparents too. There was a case in Chicago where a little boy had gone over to his grandfather's and he was just playing around in his bed. Grandfather had gone to sleep. I don't know where grandma was. And he found the grandfather's gun under the pillow.
Oh, my.
You know, mm-hmm. Under the pillow, mm-hmm. Found himself, shot himself right there on the bed, you know.
Case very much like that in Alabama. Very same thing. Kid was over being babysat by grandpa. Grandpa had guns stashed, hidden all over the house.
Mm-hmm.
Kid found one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So organizations like yours, how can businesses, this is a business radio, how can businesses and individuals help? What do you need from us?
Okay. It is in the best interest of any business to have employees that are sane. If your child is shot, you will go insane for a while. Okay? It's just craziness. So anytime a business can reach out to its employees and say, we are providing information for you about this. I mean, we have some that we give out to businesses all around. It's called five fallacies about guns. And one of those is that the first one is a hidden gun is a safe gun. Now, we've got to get over that hump of this fallacious belief. Now, this is fake news in its worst form. So businesses can do that. If businesses then want to be able to promote themselves as being pro-child safety, then, you know, on our website, well, we'll put their names up. They get like a gold star for doing this. It looks good for their customers for them to say, you know, we are not, you know, we're not pro-gun. We're not anti-gun. Yeah, we are simply pro-safety for families.
Yeah. Love that. How about for your organization as well? How can we best serve and support?
Arizona for Gun Safety right now, we used to be doing a lot more of the safety education and gun lock piece. And since there are so many other groups now working in this space from when we started back in the 90s, we kind of let groups like Gary's and Moms Demand Action kind of do that piece now. So we've moved on to doing a lot more policy pieces and things. So they certainly could, you know, make a donation or do that. But more about what we've really been focusing on is doing what we've been doing today is we created a program called Civil Dialogue Beyond the Rhetoric, where my volunteers have all become trained in as civil dialogue facilitators. And we go out and we have conversations, not screaming matches, not debates of winning and losing, but conversations in communities around issues of gun safety and policy and things like that. And we are always welcome to come out and host at, you know, business roundtables, organizations, leadership meetings, all those kind of things, and facilitate conversations about whether it's policies or what they can do to be more engaged. So we are always looking for opportunities to go out and find places that will host us so that we can have these community dialogues. The other thing we've been really engaged in lately is we have become the mentors for the March for Our Live kids. So right now we are really training the next generation of advocates in this area. And these kids are passionate and they're dedicated. And anyone who tries to tell you that they're being controlled by other people is really wrong. Believe me, there's very little controlling going on. This is their ideas and their passions and things like that. So,
and passion and drive and enthusiasm met with education.
Yes.
And
they are
right,
learning.
And the right training, right? Because it's one thing to be passionate and empowered, but it helps also, obviously, to have the right education and to have that facilitative ability underneath that as well.
Yeah, we're doing a lot of mentoring, a lot of training, a lot of teaching. Them understanding that, you know, they're not starting a movement, they're joining one.
Yes.
And learning from what has come before.
And
doing a lot of mentoring with that right now. So, and again, we are always looking for the new and the innovative. What I love about Gary's organization and things is he has really found an innovative and niche way, because many of us, one of the things that frustrates so many people in the gun violence prevention movement is that the gun industry itself is the only industry in the country that pretty much is exempt from all consumer product safety regulation and liability. Which means that the government really, like a car or a child safety crib or anything else, really can't go into a firearm manufacturer and say, you know, put safety measures on your guns like they did cars. They can't say, you know, make seatbelts and airbags and, you know, and bumpers and things. So it really is left to businesses and the open market to be creative and innovative and find this. And that's what Gary's organization has done and said, there's a need here. And it's not going to come necessarily from the gun manufacturers, but it's coming from other people who are finding this way and finding this middle ground and finding ways to make firearms safer without necessarily having to implode government regulation or mandates or anything on it. And you know, I would strongly encourage anyone to really make a donation. Gary, you were telling me before the show, so for every $1 that they donate to your foundation, you can help 10 families.
We can reach out. It costs us overall about 20 cents to reach out to a family. So, and warn them, just the kind of things we've been talking about today, it's like a wake-up call. And since the average family has two children, we can theoretically protect two kids for every dollar. We can protect five families and 10 kids, because it's five times two. So you can make a difference with just a small donation. The one thing to remember too is that children's deaths by gun, I don't care whether they're teenagers or children, it is no respecter of age, of economic status, of race, of color. I don't care what it is. And you cannot predict it. So you may be safe today, and it may be your kid on the floor tomorrow, because it's going to happen to somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You know, one of the things that I really want to say to is hats off to the kids at Parkland. God love those kids and what they have been able to do. I was part of the march down here, and I thought, oh, there'll be a few thousand people. I rode down on the train, and every stop, kids were getting on with these handmade signs, and they were so excited to be part of it. And I got there in time to hear Jerry's speech there, which was great. But it was incredible the number of kids that were there. If for me, it was like being back in the 60s.
Yeah.
You know, so I hope this movement continues. One of the things that's so important about Jerry's work in changing policy goes right back to what we were talking about with pediatricians and this barrier.
Yes.
I talked with a pediatrician at our booth at NRA in Atlanta last year, and he looked at the product and he said, and in Georgia, you can talk to parents, but he said, thank God, I have found something now that I can tell parents about, because this is, I tell them it's the warning and they say, well, I can't put the trigger lock on because, you know, I've got to have it quickly. And it says, I don't have an answer for it. This is now
this
I
is
do.
The answer.
But we got to talking about this idea of the barriers. And he just said, frankly, it is the stupidest thing in the world. And every pediatrician that is barred from doing this just is gritting their teeth because they say, no, we know we can save kids. Kids, the research shows that a family that is counseled by a pediatrician to put a gun lock on or do something safe, lock it up, whatever, is twice as likely to protect their child as one that hasn't.
Yeah, because families trust their pediatrician.
That's
and
it.
They yes. listen and they trust. It is whether, you know, whether they trust, that is someone they trust and they know. And so to gag that person is just, mm-hmm.
Doesn't make sense.
No.
And the payoff is if the pediatrician is talking to these parents, you know, when the kid is 1 year old or whatever it is, that is a benefit that is going to last for as long as that kid is in the house. They're not going to simply, you know, take the gun guard off simply because the kid gets to be 10 years old. So it's an ongoing benefit to let them do this.
Well, think about when pediatricians started talking to parents about the importance of sticking bike helmets on kids.
Mm-hmm.
We're all of an age sitting in this room. Nobody wore bike helmets when we were kids riding our bikes around. But, you know, was it the bike shop owner trying to sell that bike helmet as an accessory when we all went and bought our kids bicycles? No, but it was when that constant safety message was being reinforced by our pediatricians that, you know, the kids had to have the helmets on their head when they rode. Mm-hmm. And it's a cultural change. And that's what this has to be. It has to become the new cultural norm.
You know, I'm thinking of two other examples where our pediatrician has those kinds of messaging. One, when the pediatrician gets ready to check, you know, my son for any issues in his private area, he will say to my son, look him right in the eyes and say, you know, this is what we're going to do. And you do know that no one else is to touch, you know, I mean, he does that little brief sex education from the time he was about 6 and 7 years old. And now he's 10 at those annual checkups that holds water for him. And same thing, the conversation with my daughter, you know, I mean, those kinds of conversations that the pediatricians can have around being safe sexually. And I don't know what the right term is, but, you know, appropriate touch and helmet, wear your helmet when you ride your bike. And when my kids got ready to drive, like we get to have that influence from our doctor and that pediatrician with all those other things. Why wouldn't we have them as this positive influence and strong voice around gun safety as well? Yeah, fascinating.
You know, it's one of the things that just reminded me of is, you know, when I was younger, when I was playing football, nobody thought anything about concussions. I mean, now there has been a literal mind shift, especially among women, in the last 5 years because of concussions. Now, women will look at this. Well, parents in general will look at this and say, do I really want my kid doing this? Because now they see the coming together of the helmets and all this stuff as a lot more serious. So they were living in a fantasy land all this time before. And now they're not. And that basically is what we're trying to do with this issue also. If you don't believe your kid is in danger, if you have an unprotected gun in your house, you are living in fantasy land.
And they're,
well, it's an unsecured gun because let's protect the kids, not the guns. So let's secure the guns, protect the kids.
Yes. And there's a way to do that with this child safety lock.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. We are just about out of time. It goes so quickly, doesn't it? And I know we could talk about this for hours more. But before we close our show, I would love for each of you to share, of course, where people can get a hold of your organizations. And then just maybe one last thought that you would like to share around gun safety or child safety. And maybe something else that we hadn't thought to discuss as we close out. Jerry, you want to close for us?
If they want to follow us, you can always follow us on Arizonans for Gun Safety on our Facebook page and contact us that way. Or you can reach out to azfgs.com, which is our website, and follow us there. And, you know, this is a conversation we can have. This is a conversation we need to have. It is about reducing gun deaths and injuries and saving lives. More than anything, this thing, I mean, look at Parkland. Look at the 25,000 people, the kids who showed up, that our kids are calling out to us to say, we don't feel safe. Do something. Now they can march and they can be amazing on social media and they can, you know, register the next generation of voters, but we're still the adults and the power still in our hands and it's up to us. And when our children so clearly tell us they are not safe and we need to do better, we need to listen and make that change.
Amen.
Yeah.
Global Gun Safety Awareness. Global Gun Safety Awareness is having a crowdfunding campaign right now. If you just go on Google Global Gun Safety Awareness, you could go to the Indiegogo site. For every dollar, we can protect 10 kids. And this goes directly. There's no salaries or anything like that for this. So please do that. Also, remember that if you are concerned about your child and you feel blocked from having a conversation with your spouse because you don't want to have the argument again, ChildSafe One or any of the other options that we have on the Global Gun Safety Awareness website are ways in which you can now win this argument. You can get rid of the hidden gun. You can make it safe for your child to be around a gun. And at the same time, your husband can have quick access to it. The days of, I have to protect my family, and so I cannot block my gun, are over.
Yeah, incredible. And with this particular safety device, it can be purchased currently, or is this the...
The links to all of these things are on our website, and they can go right to it, and they can buy it tomorrow.
Wonderful. And the website again, one more time.
Global Gun Safety Awareness.
Wow. Thank you both for an important, important conversation. And of course, education, you know, obviously for me and our listeners. You've been listening to Phoenix Business Radio with Business Radio X. Some media leans left, some lean right, and we lean business. Until next time, I'm Kara Nowicki.